All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good Monday morning to you. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. Glad you could join us today. The Great Resignation, supply chain drama, inflation, the return to offices, or maybe not. It's been a big year in economic news. And today, I want to take a step back and look at all that has happened with the economy over the past year. I'm talking with two economic experts this hour about what is happening, what it all means, and how it affects your personal finances. And I definitely want to hear from you. What happened to your money in 2021? Did you struggle financially, or were you able to save more money? What financial advice do you have or do you want for 2022? The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can also leave me a question or a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. Let me bring in our two guests. We have with us today Christine West. And Christine is an associate professor of economics at St. Catherine University in St. Paul, as well as the director of the Minnesota Center for Diversity in Economics. Good morning to you, Christine.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Nice to talk with you. Glad to have you with us this hour. We also have my colleague, Chris Farrell, who is NPR's senior economics contributor. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Angela.
So, Chris, every Monday, for more than a year, we've been talking about the economy because there's been so much to process. But when you look back at the last year, how would you describe the economic world of 2021 in just a few words?
So, Angela, the uncertainties, the cross currents, they have been daunting. They've been confusing. But overall, I would say that the economy was much better than expected in 2021.
Really? Better than expected?
Yes.
Okay. So a lot of uncertainties, but still we're moving in the right direction?
Yes. And so when the Delta came out, if you go back to June, you know, that period of time, Angela, when, you know, the vaccinations and the vaccines were starting to be spread and they were effective and we were getting that information. And I don't know if you remember there were a lot of commentaries and articles about, is this going to be like the roaring 20s again? Mm-hmm. We did get some really incredible economic growth numbers. But then the Delta variant came along and that sidetracked the economy. Now we have the Omicron variant that's coming along. And again, that is sidetracking the economy. Nonetheless, people have gotten jobs. Wages are going up. The economy does continue to grow. The unemployment rate is down. And so Delta did not stop the economy. It did not derail it. It just kind of sidetracked it. So that's why I say better than expected. When Delta came along, just as we're dealing with Omicron, as that's why I say the uncertainties are so great. You really don't know how this is going to play out.
And Christine, as you look back on 2021, in a few words, how would you describe that year or this past year in terms of how it affected the economy?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo what Chris just said. I think, you know, uncertainty is the only certainty right now. But overall, things were, like he said, better than expected. I remember this time last year, we were sort of wondering what the recovery would look like. And a lot of people were using like letters. Is it going to be a V-shaped recovery, an L-shaped recovery, a U-shaped?
Yes.
And it's looking, it looks kind of like that V-shaped recovery, which was the best case scenario. I mean, I think we're going to have to wait and see as the data comes out, whether that growth that was, you know, unexpectedly strong has been universally shared. But I'm sort of optimistic like Chris is.
And so with the V-shaped recovery, is that, you know, extreme highs and lows? Or tell me what that is again.
Yeah, I mean, that's just sort of looking at a GDP chart. And we saw this like drastic drop in 2020 when the shock of the pandemic hit. And then the question was, what was going to happen to GDP going forward? Was it going to rebound quickly or was it going to sort of stay low for a while? And it's rebounded remarkably quickly, creating a V-shape. Mm-hmm.
And Chris, you know, you were mentioning the variants, and I remember over the last year, you would often say, COVID's in the driver's seat, right? So we respond based on, you know, what's happening with COVID-19. But one of the things that we've seen, particularly in the workplace with a lot of companies, is really this acceleration of the digital economy and every business trying to up its digital game.
So this is one of the profound transformations. You know, for a long time, Angela, there's been this debate about, you know, we have these incredible technologies and digital technologies, and yet it doesn't seem like the economy is that much more productive, that, you know, we're producing more goods and services with less labor. And so we kept having this discussion, you know, okay, so are these technologies, they don't lead to higher productivity? They might lead to higher productivity of our entertainment, but not of our industries and our businesses. And I think what we saw during the pandemic is just a dramatic shortening of investment and a realization about how important it is. And even, you know, small businesses along University Avenue and Lake Street, I mean, you know, they're investing in their web presence and everybody knows. And so I think it's an acceleration of the digital economy. And it's also broken down some stereotypes. I was reading one of the grocery store magazines, trade magazines, and they were talking about how in the grocery stores, they thought their customers, digital, 60 and over, don't pay any attention to them. You know, they're not going to be able to deal with this stuff. And what they learned during the pandemic is that that was their main customer online was 60 years and over, and they better start devoting some resources to that customer rather than just writing them off as digital illiterates.
So they thought that folks, older Minnesotans, for example, wouldn't respond to like, okay, this is how you'll be able to get your groceries.
Exactly.
Just pick it out online and we'll pack it up for you and you just come pick it up.
Oh, the, you know, terrible stereotypes. Oh, right. They're fuddy-duddies. They don't want to learn this new technology. And what they never really realized, I mean, the reality is if you think about the older generation, you know, they started out with IBM Selectrics that if you did and hit the enter button, you could erase one line without using whiteout. And then they went to dedicated word processors and they went to PCs. Now they've gone to smartphones. They've adopted to a lot of technologies, but there were these stereotypes out there. And again, that stereotype fell apart. Same thing on telemedicine.
Telehealth.
Mm-hmm. Telehealth wasn't much going on with telehealth. Now we've seen that it, you know, it can really add to what the healthcare package of services and can be very useful for people. It's not a solution, but it adds to the package of healthcare.
And Christine, did you see that same thing that, you know, every business, every type of company, every industry figured out how to improve its digital game and saw a tremendous response?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was sort of reflecting that I think in 2020, it was really about, you know, reacting to the shock of COVID. But I think in 2021, like Chris says, it was really about what are the long-term ways that we're going to adapt and change? And what are we going to see? You know, I think COVID exposed and accelerated some of these trends, like Chris was talking about, that we've been sort of wondering about for a long time, like what was going to happen with some of these technologies. And to see that push in that mass adaptation, like we all had to figure out Zoom together. Think about in higher ed, you know, for many years, like Chris said, people have been wondering, what's going to be the future of online learning? And then all of a sudden, we all had to do online learning, even the old fuddy-duddies, right? Had to figure it out. And we did.
Yeah.
And now there's that mass adaptation of some new technologies.
As we have this conversation, I'm like, it's the end of 2021. I'm still processing 2020. I think my sense of time has just got, I think, has really become very blurred. All right, let's take some phone calls because we're talking about sort of the biggest economic news of 2021. But personally, I want to know, what happened to your money in 2021? Did you struggle more? Were you able to save more? Do you think about money differently because of what you went through this past year? And do you need some financial advice? We have two experts who can maybe guide you in the right direction. The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can tweet me at Angela Davis, MPR. Let's talk to a listener now in Minneapolis. Hope is on the phone. Hope, thank you for calling in and what you want to share with us or ask.
Hi, Angela.
Hi.
I wanted to share some of my struggles I experienced this year financially.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a college student, and I noticed that this year I was able to acquire a lot of money, which I was very blessed for. But over the course of time, I noticed that when I had feelings of loneliness or like depression, my way of feeling better was by spending my savings. And so I would always be in this predicament where I would acquire money, but at a period of time, it will just go away and I will be back to square one again. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to know, for a college student who has this habit, what are some tactics that I could use to improve my financial habit when I am feeling lonely or depressed?
Well, Hope, you're not alone in this. I think even among older folks, we were all doing some extra spending, just trying to feel better. What, you know, it's been nicknamed retail therapy. Is that what you saw it as a way to just make yourself feel better in the moment, just to get through the day?
I think that's a good way to look at it. Like, going out definitely did give me like a sense of belonging, a sense of like having a purpose, especially like, you know, going in and like looking at the new products, knowing that I didn't need it, but I had enough to buy it. So to fulfill that need, I just bought it to buy it.
I hear you. You're not alone in this, Hope. And Christine, you're an associate professor there at St. Catherine University. Hope's a college student, but she's talking about her emotions and spending. What do you hear in her questions and her story?
You know, I hear a lot that I can relate to. Like you said, we all did a little bit of retail therapy this year, and we see that reflected in the aggregate numbers, too. I mean, I think her story shows how much we've shifted our spending from spending on experiences and services and things that we used to do, like going out to restaurants with friends. And that was good for our mental health. And now we do some online shopping, and we see this in the numbers. We see much higher spending on goods, particularly all that online shopping. So she's not alone. And, you know, the other thing that I thought about as she was telling her story was, you know, as a college professor, I can tell you that college remains a really good investment. So stay in school and do what you need to do to stay focused on your studies, because I'm really bullish on education right now. And I think it's a good time to be a college graduate.
But it is problematic. She talked about dipping into her savings for some of this. And so what would you say about that, Christine?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hear in her comment that she knows that she needs to think about making sure that she's not spending beyond her means, making sure that she's thinking about how to keep herself comfortable and, you know, healthy, but not dipping too far into her savings.
Right. Chris, I think we've done shows on, you know, what we learned about savings. I mean, we all knew we were supposed to save money. Then the pandemic hit, and then we really learned the benefits of having a healthy savings account.
I do want to echo what Christine was saying about the value of an education. That is one of the clear messages that is coming out of this whole period of time. But here are a couple, maybe some practical ideas for Hope. So first of all, when the money comes in, give some of it away. I know that may sound strange, but when we give our money away, it separates us from our money, and it gets us to sort of think about, well, what is the purpose of this money? How am I trying to make this world a better place? And I'm not talking about much. Just give a little bit of it away and build that into when you're looking at your savings. And I think that actually helps people put generosity at the center of the way they're managing their money. It actually helps them manage their money better. Then you're going to put a little bit of savings, and then you got a little bit you mark for spending, and it doesn't matter what you spend it on. You know, just enjoy it. Hey, it's fine. And one other thing, just very quickly, is that I imagine your friends are in the exact same situation. So remember, your connections are important. Talk to your connections. Share your stories. Get their ideas for what they're doing, you know, to keep themselves mentally healthy, keep themselves engaged, have a little bit of fun, but not spend too much money. Your friends can be a really good source of information.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about the economy and our money in 2021. What did we learn? What do we still need to learn moving into the new year? In Invergrove Heights, David's on the phone. Good morning, David.
Good morning. I appreciate you taking my phone call.
Sure. What did you want to tell us?
I'm closing in on retirement, and I would like to invest some money, which I've been fortunate enough to squirrel away working through all of this. And I'm looking to put in something that's not too volatile. I'm kind of want to shy away from the stock market. I currently, my 401 and Roth and all that is invested in that. So I'm looking for something a little safer that I could go ahead and put some of this money into.
All right. And you have some money saved, sounds like. You're already on the way.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to able to put away a decent sum of money.
All right. Well, congratulations on closing in on retirement. And Chris, any advice for David?
Two things. Very quickly, when thinking about where to put your money, you know, it's, and obviously this is just a quick question and a phone call that you're reaching out to Angela, but, you know, thinking about what it is you want to be doing as you enter into your retirement years and then investing your money in ways that support what it is you want to be doing. So your money supports your goals, supports your values. Very short term right now, I would invest U.S. savings bonds, particularly the I bond, which is an inflation adjusted bond. Now, you have to tie up the money for a period of time. But if inflation does go up, the value of your dollar will stay a value of a dollar after adjusted for inflation. You get a 7.2% interest rate right now. That'll adjust in April, but it's a very nice rate of interest. Full faith and credit of the federal government behind it. Protection against inflation. And you do lock it up for a certain number of years. But if you cash it in before then, you only pay a penalty in the sense of you just don't get as much interest as you thought you were going to get. So I love U.S. savings bonds while you're thinking about what else you want to do with your money.
As we think about money in 2021, we think about, you know, a lot of folks leaving their jobs, choosing to get new jobs, trying to figure out what they want to do. And Christine, we know now a lot of companies, they have been pushing back, delaying the return to the office dates over and over again because of, you know, the different variants of COVID-19 and how the pandemic has shifted and changed. And it looks like now we're getting, for I think in a lot of cases, this kind of until further notice message from many employers. What do you think that means for the future of our workplaces?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, this has been really interesting to watch, to think about, you know, what's work going to look like next year and into the years to come. And I think it's fairly safe to say that the future of work probably is hybrid, right? And I think the question is just like, how hybrid? How many days are we going into the office? We're not going to go in 5 days a week, I don't think. I think we've all shown that we can be productive from home and productive via some of the technologies we talked about, like Zoom. You know, I think it's been productivity enhancing, but not universally the same across all occupations. So some of the answer to your question depends on what kind of work you're doing, you know, what kind of job you have. But I think hybrid is a safe prediction for the future.
And Chris, what about you? As we look forward, what does what we've seen in 21, what is that signaling what we'll see in 2022 in terms of workplace scenarios?
So I would echo what Christine is saying is that managements are now going to adjust, that we're moving into this hybrid world. I mean, if you think about managements in 2021, particularly out of the financial services industries and another number of other industries, we're saying the workers coming back. They're coming back in the office. We need to be in the same place. We need to have that creative spark that happens by people just walking the same corridors. And the worker was pushing back. The worker was saying, you know, look, I want to come back. I do want to come back, but I don't want to come back 5 days a week. Hey, let's do this hybrid model. And managements were really resisting that. I think now what's happening in 2022, we're moving to hybrid model. We're going to come back to the office. I think that actually a lot of these delays that are coming in right now probably will be reversed fairly early in 2022 as people adjust to a world of hybrid work.
We're talking about the top economic stories of 2021 and what happened to your money this past year. Tell us, did you struggle financially? Were you able to save more? Did you make some changes? Do you need some financial advice for the year ahead? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828 as we talk to Christine West, who is an associate professor of economics at St. Catherine University, as well as the director of the Minnesota Center for Diversity and Economics, and NPR's Chris Farrell, who is our senior economics contributor. The number is 651-227-6000. Okay, let's go to Apple Valley, where Percy's on the phone. Good morning, Percy. What's going on with your money?
Well, good morning. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to piggyback on Mr. Chris's comment about giving away a little money. I've been unemployed since March of this year, still looking for work, haven't found, you know, something that I really like yet. But I, on occasion, when I'm out walking around Apple Valley, I would see a homeless guy, and I would give him a little money, and it made me feel a little bit better that you know, I was able to give him a little bit and add a little bit to it, you know. And so that comment really struck me, you know, when he told me that, and so I just wanted to, you know, talk about that.
So, Percy, you said it made you feel better. So
yes.
How has that factored into your job search and just how you're feeling about your own financial situation?
Well, you know, it's not, my financial situation is not the best. You know, I've always worked, you know, so I've always been used to having the income. But, you know, the anxiety a little bit has mm-hmm. sort of gotten to me. So, you know, when is the next job coming? When is the next job coming? You know, and so, you know, being a little bit older, you know, it can be kind of a little bit rougher.
Right.
I sort of lost my train of thought. But, Percy, but you know, that's what I sort of want to know.
I'm curious. You said you've been unemployed for 10 months. What type of yeah. work did you do before? And are you looking for the same type of work, or are you trying to do something totally different?
Well, I actually, the job I left was in human services, mm-hmm. But I did do the Foreign Service at one time, and, you know, actually after injury, I had to leave it. But looking, you know, looking for something, you know, a little bit more intellectually stimulating, I guess I could say, mm-hmm. Would be nice for me to move myself on into retirement, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind
well,
of
Percy,
stuff
I'm wishing you well, and I appreciate your generosity, and I'm hoping that you find a job that makes you happy and soon. And so, Mr. Chris, as he calls you, Chris, he picked up on what you said. You should, you know, give away some money that could, you know, impact your emotional health.
Yes. And, you know, I really do believe that when we think about managing your household money, and for, you know, for many people who are lucky enough to work in an organization that has a 401k or a 403b retirement savings plan, that type of thing, and they own their own home, perhaps, you know, those are like their biggest assets, and they mm-hmm. give away a certain amount of money. But if you put, you know, giving at the core of how you manage money. Think of the questions, Angela, that you ask yourself when you give your money away. You know, how do I want to make the world a better place? Just think what Percy was doing. How can mm-hmm. I improve the lot of this person? How can I improve my community? Well, why not use those same questions when you think about am I going to spend your money? And think about the shows that you've done about local businesses and spending your money at a local business in order to support them and to support their employees. And so I think it's a mindset that anchors you and anchors you with your money in a way that when we're just focusing on income and spending isn't as powerful.
That was a big shift in 2021, how we, I guess, you know, how we see ourselves and how we decide what we really, really, really care about. Have you seen that, Christine?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking as I was listening to that caller and to mm-hmm. Chris's response that, you know, one of the things I wrote down on my list for financial advice for the new year is to find a job that you really love, right? The mm-hmm. sort of Great Resignation is really a chance for people to find a job that, like Percy said, is intellectually rewarding mm-hmm. and like we're alluding to is something that you feel like makes a difference in the world and has the right hybrid mix that allows you to spend the time that you want to spend in the workplace and at home with your family. And so I do think that COVID gave us a chance to think about some of those big things. And you know, economists will tell you that economics really isn't about maximizing money. It's about maximizing happiness. We call it utility. And all these things that you're talking about are, how are we as households thinking about what makes us happy and what we really want to do with our lives?
I want to take another phone call from a listener as we talk about our finances and what we learned about money and the economy in 2021 in St. Paul. Beth is on the phone. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Angela. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm a renter, and I had been saving up for a first-time home purchase and was sort of thinking about doing that in 2020, and then 2020 happened, so that didn't mm-hmm. happen. mm-hmm. And now I'm you know, still socking money away for down payments and not sure how to think about trying to time a home purchase. Are prices done going up? Are they going to come down? Are the interest rates going to shift both in terms of the price of the home and the stress levels that we saw in 2020 where people were like, you know, 75 offers on a house for $30,000 above asking or whatever, that I was just not. Didn't feel it would be good for my mental health. So I'd love to know what your guests have to say about how kind of what's happening with the market and what they think is how they would think about that question.
Great question, Beth. I want to know, too, what do we know about home buying? Because people went through it in the housing market in 2021. Chris?
Well, one thing, just congratulations, Beth, because one of the most stressful situations is to be house poor, is to buy that house, to to stretch immensely to get in it. And home ownership is expensive. There are some tax benefits, and that's wonderful. There are lots of benefits to home ownership, but home ownership is expensive. So not getting caught up in what's going on right now, congratulations. Looking into 2022, you know, we still have the core issue is there simply is not enough housing for ownership, and there's not enough shelter for rent. And that situation is getting better very, very slowly. You know, you drive around town, you're seeing lots of stuff going up, but nonetheless, you know, it tends to be higher end. And there's some projects that are currently under delay, but still, there is more product coming on there. It's going to move slowly. I think what you do is you do exactly what Beth is doing. You build your savings. You do your research. You figure out what is it that I want to own? What neighborhood do I want to be? And you follow it. Markets don't go to the sky. And so, you know, we are seeing some signs of slowing down in the housing market. There may be some opportunities down the road. You know, my crystal ball is as cloudy as anybody's. But what I really applaud is her discipline.
I know she keeps sucking that money away and waiting. And Christine, anything that you saw in the housing market in 2021 that gave you pause?
Yeah, you know, my crystal ball is about as cloudy as Chris's. So I'm not sure what the future holds. Although I will say, I think it's a fair bet to say that interest rates are going to go up. I mean, the Fed has said as much, and they're very credible. If they say they're going to raise interest rates, they will. And I'll echo what Chris said on the housing. I think what was really interesting looking back at the housing is it is a supply side problem that we're facing, right? The demand is outstripping supply. It's a classic problem in economics. And I looked into this a little bit with the rent control debate that we had going on, and I was just struck by how much the supply has not kept up with the demand and how that's had real impacts for the price of housing, both in terms of owner-occupied and also rental housing.
All right. Well, we're talking about money and economics and what we learned in 2021 and what we need to learn in, going forward when managing our money. What happened to your money in 2021? I want to know. Call us. The number is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Do you need some financial advice? Do you want to share a story? Let's talk about it. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can drop me a line on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, MPR. Let's take more phone calls. In Minneapolis, Beth is on the line. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning, Angela.
Hi, what's going on?
I really thank you for taking my call again.
Sure. What's going on, Beth?
Well, listen, this year I am intending on running away from my corporate job. And I'm going to devote more time and effort to the business my husband and I own. We own a game business, and we ship all over the world. It's been a very good Christmas. Actually, it's been a very good 2021 on an international basis. We've been shipping product to England and Germany on a fairly regular basis at about $1,000 a crack, which is way better than we have done in the past. So I'm very pleased about that.
Tell me about these games. What kind of games are you talking about?
We do historical board games.
Oh.
We do, you know, your standard, which you think of chess and checkers, and then we move into things that are more regional, like 12 Man's Morris and Captain's Mistress. Mm-hmm. We also have a very extensive period card line that we have researched and documented. We've been on places like The Rain and Treasure Island with Eddie Izzard, and yeah, a couple of other places we've been. Guillermo del Toro has taken us for a couple of different things he's done with Stain. My cards have been all over because we researched them really well. So that's where I'm intending on going for our business.
So you said you're running away from your corporate job, so this
yes.
was your side business, the
this
game?
This is my side business.
Wow.
My husband is self-employed for 25 years.
So 2021 was good to you?
Yeah, 2021 was good to me. Now, here's my question. I got a boatload of cash in my 401k, and I'm going to have to start taking some of it to live on. And I don't want to join as much taxes as possible. Got any suggestions for me? I'm intending on taking out as little as possible and as, mm-hmm. you know, for as long as possible until they force me to start taking more.
All right. Well, let's ask Chris. Chris, first of all, I think I want to be like Beth. I want to run away with my husband and sell some games. And she's, you know, yeah, boatload of cash. Sounds good. But Beth is still continuing to be smart with her money. What should she do?
Very smart. And I just want to, as an aside, you know, and we've talked about this, Angela. One of the things that comes out of this period of time that we're through has been the explosion of new businesses.
Yes.
I mean, many businesses failed and it was tragic and it was terrible early in the pandemic. But since then, there has been this explosion of businesses. And it's one of the things to really follow as this works its way through the economy and, you know, how these businesses are going to grow, how many are going to survive. So I was really intrigued by what she was saying. The key question for Beth is whether she's 59 and a half. And if she's over 59 and a half, she can take the money out without a penalty. And then it really just comes down to minimizing how much you take out, because you're going to pay your ordinary income tax rates on the amount that you withdraw.
So she was talking about her 401k.
That's right.
Is it wise or is
– You know, and I think it was implicit in her question. She knows that she should not draw on it if she can avoid drawing on it. That would be the best thing to do. But if she has to take a little bit out, again, if she's over 59 and a half, she does have to pay the 10% penalty. And it's just kind of minimizing how much you take out.
Christine, what did you hear in Beth's story? What did you hear in Beth's voice?
Oh, you know, well, Chris gave her great advice, first of all, about leaving that 401k alone unless you're old enough that you don't incur that penalty. But I think you're right, Angela. Like, there was a lot in her story that was really interesting. You know, I've bought a lot of games online. I was kind of interested in her games. I know, you know, mm-hmm. my mom's buying a lot of cool puzzles online. We're all investing in these fun things to do at home with the mm-hmm. pandemic going on. And, you know, I also heard the state economist talk the other day, and she echoed what Chris was saying about how there's just a really rich environment for entrepreneurship. And we're seeing a lot of new businesses opening up. And that sort of creativity in new businesses is an exciting thing to watch going forward.
Christine, as we've talked about many times on this show, women left the workforce in much higher numbers than men over the past few years. So what does that mean for the economy moving forward?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's definitely something I wanted to talk about today. Yeah, you know, we keep talking about how we haven't seen inflationary numbers like this since the 1980s. Well, the other thing we haven't seen since the 1980s is women's labor force participation like we're seeing right now. It is down and it hasn't rebounded as quickly. I was very optimistic with my V-shaped recovery comments, but I don't see that V-shape when I look at women's labor force participation, and particularly for mothers. And so I think this is absolutely an issue that we have to tackle going into the new year. We have to think about how we're going to make investments in our economy that support parents and mothers as they juggle work and school and childcare.
And another topic we've tackled several times over the last year on this program, we've talked about childcare. Childcare is a huge part of this. And we know that there's a childcare shortage in many states, including Minnesota. And so what are you seeing leaders and policymakers doing to try to address that problem? Or what should they be doing? Christine?
Oh, gosh. I mean, we could, like you say, you've done shows on this. We could do a whole show on this. This is the number one thing that we need to pay attention to. And I do think that policymakers are taking it more seriously than they ever had before. You know, as an aside, I think that's because we see more women in charge in the, you know, we've got Janet Yellen at the helm in the Treasury, and we've got Cece Rouse at the Council of Economic Advisors and others. And so I think we see some women economists who are saying, this is not a women's issue. This is an economic issue. Mm-hmm. I was really a fan of the fact that in the last year, we started to talk about childcare as infrastructure, because I think it is. I think just like we need roads to get to work, we need childcare if we're going to be able to get to work. And so I think as an economy, that's what needs to happen, is there needs to be large scale investments in childcare.
I love it. I love how you phrased that, Christine. I want to take another phone call. In Farmington, we're talking to Randy. Randy, what's going on with your money? Or what question do you have about your finances?
Well, I'm a late bloomer here on savings for retirement. Mm-hmm. I haven't got much put away. And I'm in a position now where I got good money coming in. And I just want to know what his feelings on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency.
All right. You know, and Chris, I remember the beginning of the year, we were talking about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and trying to understand what's going on. What did you see in 2021 and what can you say to Randy?
So we saw really an explosion of interest in Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies. And, you know, there are now people, you know, advocating for putting some of your retirement savings into cryptocurrencies. There are some ways that you can do that. You have the big names on Wall Street are getting into it. A number of the hedge funds are getting into it. So we really did see this cryptocurrency infrastructure sort of rise just because of all the speculative interest. That said, you know, you're now savings. Cryptocurrency is for the speculators. And I would say for the cryptocurrencies, you know, let the institutions play around. Let them figure out what's going on here. You know, now that you're in a position to be saving, you want to be saving in ways that that money is going to be there when you need it. So it's, you know, the fundamentals of blocking and tackling, you know, have savings. If you can put some into the stock market and you're comfortable with that risk, that's fine. That's great. But go for a broad-based, low-cost index fund where you sort of invest in lots of really high-quality companies, nothing fancy. You know, this is where you sort of – because you want that money to be there when you're retiring and now that you're making a decent income. And then if you want to take a couple hundred dollars and have a little fun with the cryptocurrency just because it adds to the spice of life – that's fine, but you don't want to risk your standard of living in retirement to a speculative vehicle that people still don't really quite understand how it works. Mm.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about what we learned about our money and about the economy in 2021 and what we need to know and what we need to do in 2022. In St. Paul, Carolyn's on the phone. Hi, Carolyn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, my pleasure. Nice to speak with you. Our family's been impacted. We have three teenagers at home. And first of all, my grocery bill has been through the roof, largely because when they were doing distance learning, obviously they were eating at home and they were normally eating at school. So that was certainly a factor. And the other factor is that we were hesitant to put them out into a service industry job for a part-time job. You know, we didn't want them in restaurants. We didn't want them in grocery stores. And because they got vaccinated late, so they've not been able to get part-time jobs and certainly are not able to learn some of those money management skills that we were able to teach our older daughter when she had a part-time job.
And you're, Carolyn, you're sharing a story that many people, I'm sure, you know, have with the impact of distance learning on households and the economy. And so what is your question? Are you looking for advice on how to help them or how to help them help out the household or...
Well, I think that the comment is, you know, how that just impacts family.
Right.
So you're talking about budgeting and family planning for the grocery bill and, you know, not having additional supplemental income potentially from teenage workers who could potentially take care of some of that. It's just, I know it's been really impactful for lots of families with children, particularly those with teens.
Yeah, it's good to highlight what's happening there. I'm visualizing these three hungry teenagers in Carolyn's home, Christine. Can you see that scenario?
Yeah, I can. I guess maybe I've been real focused on childcare because I have younger kids. Mm-hmm. And so that's been the impact for me. But I hear her with teenagers and food prices are up. She didn't mention that, but we've seen some of this inflationary pressure on food prices too. So three hungry teens and food prices 3% higher than they were, at least, maybe more. So, yeah.
And what we know about so many essential workers, frontline workers there in grocery stores or in other type of retail jobs, jobs that typically you would see teenagers in, you know, the teens and their families not wanting to expose them to COVID-19. Chris, it was a challenge this past year.
It was a challenge this past year. And one of the biggest aspects of employers complaining that they can't get the workers that they need, you know, one was with Christine is just so important is the lack of childcare. And by the way, the childcare industry was in turmoil and in trouble way before the pandemic. The pandemic just made it just glaringly obvious the issues there. But also, many more people retired, way above what you would consider the normal retirement rate. And whether people voluntarily or involuntarily lost their jobs, they're not coming back into the workforce because they're older and they seem to be concerned about the risks of COVID, just what you're talking about. So one of the things that we'll be watching in 2022 is do these retirees come back to the workforce or not?
Chris, I mentioned we're going to get into President Joe Biden's Build Back Better bill over the weekend. We saw in the news that Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, said that he would not support the bill. That's considered a huge blow to President Biden. And so what does all of that mean for the economy?
Well, already a number of the Wall Street investment houses are lowering their forecasts for economic growth because it was a nearly $2 trillion bill. It's also the most ambitious bill, even though it's been already pared back. And this is the turn toward the care economy, the caregiving economy. And so has among the important things, probably one of the most important things, is the child credit has had a dramatic impact on the household finances of families living on low and unstable incomes. It also has support and for the child care industry, elder care industry, and then a lot with addressing climate change. So this was a really ambitious bill. It is a big blow. Okay, I admit I am an optimist. I'm always optimist. Joe Manchin came out against it very strongly Sunday night. That came as a big surprise. My own feeling is it ain't over till it's over.
Oh, wow. Christine, what about your thoughts? You know, President Biden's infrastructure bill, you know, and this Build Back Better bill. What do you think the impact that could have moving into the new year?
Yeah, same thing. You know, I saw the investment houses downgrade their predictions for growth. And I agree. I think this was the kind of investment that we probably needed. I mean, like Chris said, it had a lot of the things that I think are the underlying issues that we need to be investing in, things like childcare and the environment. I mean, it had stuff in there about broadband access. Like, these are the kind of infrastructure investments that will help long run economic growth. And I like Chris's optimism. It ain't over till it's over. These issues aren't going away. Like, these are going to be the issues that we're going to be grappling with in the new year. And so whether it's this bill or something else, these are the policy issues of our time.
All right. We're going into 2022. It ain't over until it's over is what we're hearing from our financial experts this morning. In Duluth, let's take a phone call from David. David, what do you want to share with us or ask?
Hi. I'm a self-employed artist, and I had a really phenomenal year, and I'm as shocked as anybody by that statement. And I've been looking at solo 401ks, and it seems like a daunting task to set one up and just wire a bunch of money from my bank. And what can you tell me about them?
Okay, so you're interested in the solo 401k retirement plan, but David, I want to know more about your work as an artist, and how did the year go for you in terms of selling your artwork?
Well, I sell through a gallery, and they have an online presence, and I think a lot of people were just enjoying buying from home and doing something nice for themselves, and
they bought a lot of stuff from you.
They bought a lot of
That's
stuff.
Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Chris, David in Duluth is asking about a solo 401k retirement plan. What can you tell us about that?
So for the self-employed who are making a good income, a solo 401k plan is a tremendous way to sock money away for retirement. But it does come with some reporting requirements, a little bit of complexity. There's an IRA for the self-employed, which is, you know, costs very simple to set up, very, very simple to manage, very simple to run, essentially has no fees attached to it except for, you know, depending on what you invested in, typically mutual funds, and you'll pay a fee for that. So if you're really not quite sure about this and you're kind of wondering what to do, I would just go for upfront the self-employed 401k. You can still sock away a fair amount of money, but you can be more aggressive with the solo 401k, but it just takes more work and more understanding about what it is you're doing. There's just more paperwork involved.
In Minneapolis, let's talk with Chris as we talk about our money and what we learned in 2021. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, we're learning a lot. What's going on with you and your money?
Well, I don't have very much. No, I was thinking about actually, you know, my business remodeling and stuff like that. And, you know, during the COVID thing and all the other financial things, I think people have almost started looking at stuff like that as a luxury, like they would art almost. You know, it's like, wow, I really want to do that.
Are you a contractor? You talked about remodeling. Are you a contractor?
Yeah, small. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Very small, pretty much work by myself, except for bigger projects. But I was just thinking about something one of your people said earlier about, like, giving money away. And that is something that I have found, like the guy said, has given me really a lot of joy. Like, and there's one particular guy on the corner that I've known for like a year or so. We chatted up sometimes, but it's like, wow, he needs this $20 way more than I do.
Are you surprised to hear, like, Chris, a lot of people have talked about just the emotions attached to money, but again, what they've gotten out of being able to give, how that has helped them deal with their own personal situations better.
Yeah, I love these observations, and I find it, you know, reinforcing to the idea. And, you know, it was like years ago, Angela, I gave a talk and I mentioned tithing. And it was before an audience of about 200 people. And I gave a talk about a bunch of stuff. But that is all people wanted to talk about was, how do you tithe? What does tithing mean? How, what percentage? And so that was one of those moments where you start going, okay, I want to learn more about this. I want to think more about this and do more research about it. And I do think what these callers are saying to our listeners are, think about generosity first.
Christine, in our last minute here, what will you be watching in 2022? What are you interested in learning more about with the economy and with money in the new year?
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm surprised how much we talked about the charity and the generosity. That's such a great theme. I'm really glad we picked up on it. But I'm also a little bit worried. I don't want us to lose track that as a society, we need to be thinking about policy that puts those social safety nets in place as well, right? It can't just be individual charity and sort of feel good giving that does this for us. And so maybe some of the things that we need to look for in the future are those things I alluded to before. How are we going to invest in that social safety net that allows people to thrive and maximize their happiness?
Well, as we bring the hour to a close, I want to remind our listeners that it is a great time to make a tax-deductible gift to NPR News. You can help us reach our year-end goal of $950,000. You can make a donation that makes a difference. Support the conversations we have here on our 9 a.m. hour each day. And support from our listeners, as you know, helps us bring you these conversations, as well as trusted fact-based journalism. So go to nprnews.org and you can make a donation to us today. I want to thank our guests, Christine West, an associate professor of economics at St. Catherine University in St. Paul, as well as the director of the Minnesota Center for Diversity in Economics, and NPR's Chris Farrell, our senior economics contributor, who joins me every Monday as we talk about money matters. Today's conversation was produced by Samantha Matsumoto. Be safe, everyone, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.